You are listening to Your Pod and Your Staff, the podcast of College Life Christian Fellowship at UC Davis. I am Peter Nittler, the college pastor of First Baptist Church in Davis, California, and our mission is to shape college-age people from all spiritual starting points into complete and equipped agents of King Jesus. And on our podcast, we want to have conversations that will accompany our Tuesday night Zoom gatherings, and we hope that they form you, encourage you, maybe even make you laugh, and that they would be a source of King Jesus guiding you through this time. And we're back this week with some more Talks on Talk. And this time it's with two of just the most delightful people you could talk to, Kyle Jung and Paige Abril. And Kyle and Paige are not just wonderful conversation partners, so much fun to talk to. They are also illustrations of what makes this whole preaching class process such an unbelievable thing. You know, every year before the preaching class starts, Stanford and I wonder, is this really helpful? Should we really be doing this? Is this really a good use of the students' time? And then, you know, you watch the students go through this process and you hear the talks that they end up giving. You hear the thrill of them telling the story of God and discovering it sort of in their own lives. And then you hear the way that their thoughts on the scriptures are being changed and formed, and they're learning what it means to really dig in and get to the truth and the thrill that they're having. And then you're watching them learn how to communicate that truth clearly and winsomely. And it all starts to feel like we're not talking about a preaching class anymore. We're talking about discipleship. And that's what's been so wonderful about all these conversations in Talks on Talks, is to watch and hear how these students are really becoming more complete and equipped through this process. And I am so proud of them. And it's not easy to give a sermon, and even not easier to try and do that on Zoom. And so these students have been remarkable, and I hope that you've enjoyed learning from them as much as I have. So to the preaching class of 2021, well done. Enjoy the greatest feeling of all time, being done with your talk. But Kyle and Paige will take it from here. So without further ado, enjoy the podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Your Pod and Your Staff. This is Talks on Talks. Is this the fourth one we've done? I think this is the fourth one we've done. And I'm thrilled about this one. I think that the two guests that we have today, if you don't know them yet, you're going to be like, these must be the valedictorians of UC Davis. These must be the students on the cover of the magazine. Who we have today, Paige and Kyle. Paige and Kyle are two of the people with whom one can have the best kinds of conversations. I don't think I've ever had a bad conversation with either one of you, and I've had many. You're both seniors now, and so I wonder if I keep talking, will any of you butt in?
Well,
if I just keep talking, well, it could just be my whole monologue.
I have no intention of doing so.
That's okay. How conversations work. We don't just like butt in when you're still talking.
That's true. Paige, Kyle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
You're right at home here.
Thanks for having us.
Here.
Tell me about yourselves. Tell me about your life today. What's going on?
Wow, big question.
Yeah. What sorts of thoughts are you thinking?
I'm thinking I'm still waking up.
Yeah.
I had my coffee. I'm hoping that it kicks in.
Thirty seconds. You know how they say, you know, for exercise and stuff, it's like you shouldn't limit yourself. Like if you usually do a half hour run, a 15-minute run's okay, you know. I don't think a 30-second walk is doing anything for
you. Did you just open
That's
your
30
door?
Seconds.
Yeah.
I went about halfway down the block. And let me tell you, that's about 30 seconds longer than I normally go outside in a day, other than, like, walking to my car. So
that's depressing.
it's pretty good.
This is kind of sad. It's like you can turn for the worse.
Yeah. You got to get to the natural world.
Right.
Yeah. That's true.
Kyle, I should say, not to out you or anything, but Paige and I were talking before we got on about how sometimes when we are in our 12 meetings and you'll show up like an hour in and you'll just be like, yeah, I thought it was at 9.
Right. That has happened twice now.
Twice.
The first time.
That's my favorite.
The first time was kind of my fault. I am not often on the Slack channel where we communicate, and so I did
I'm
not
surprised.
See,
most people are.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I didn't see it.
That was sarcasm.
And so I was just looking at our 12 meeting schedule, and it also said 9 in the morning. So when I showed up at 9:05 and you guys were mid-conversation, I thought this is very uncharacteristic of a Peter meeting, because normally there's at least half an hour.
There's no intro.
Talk.
There's no ramp. I'm like...
So that was what first tipped me off. The second time was entirely my fault. I just
the schedule said 8 a.m. The first one is partially your fault. But that's okay.
Well, it was, because if the schedule still said 9, like the agenda, the meeting agenda still said 9, I didn't remember that. So yeah, you're off the hook, man.
The second one, it said 8 a.m. and I just
forgiven.
I just didn't know.
You kind of forgot 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago was so far away.
What about you, Paige? Any deep thoughts you've had this morning?
Yeah, I don't know, Kyle. You had such a big morning because I woke up at 6:30 and I was able to get my breakfast from my fridge and make a cup of tea. That's all I did, and then changed. And so I wasn't able to have these glorious 30-second walks, apparently, and really make coffee.
Yeah.
Right. You're on top of the game. I did not get to have that, but I still had it's still been a nice morning. The sun is shining from my window.
That's right.
I mean, some of it. That's right. The sun's not totally up. It's still waking up also. But yeah, this morning is so far, there's not been a lot to make it a bad morning. So far it's going great.
Yeah. And we get to spend time together. So it's good stuff. It's good times.
Right.
Well, let's dive in to what we're talking about. You two just led College Life in two successive Tuesday nights. And I was going to say gave two talks, but Kyle, as we'll hear, you did something a little bit different when you were at the helm of Tuesday night. And so we're going to dive into that though. This is Talks on Talks, man. We got to talk about talks. So you all sort of know the drill by this point. That's right. If you've been listening, what we're going to do is we're going to hear a little bit about the process for these two. We're going to hear sort of their thoughts on the passage that they got to dive deeply into and then what they hope that we remember. And so let's dive in with a cup of recappuccino. Sounds like Paige has got some tea. Kyle has some coffee. I have a cup of coffee. Why don't we all pool our resources together, maybe throw them all in one cup, everything we're drinking, and we'll call that a recappuccino. What do you think?
Wow. A lot of mixed metaphors, but I'm super down for it.
Cool. Okay. All right. So let me ask you this. We want to hear what the most surprising, what the best thing about this whole process was for you. The whole process meaning the preaching class, going, picking a topic, learning how to preach, learning how to teach, studying it, doing all the notes, finally giving it, doing the practice talk, the whole thing. I'm just curious to know what the experience was like for you. And so, Paige, why don't you get us rolling? What do you think?
Yeah.
Pour us a cup of recappuccino, will you?
Totally. I will totally get my tea and make it a cappuccino. So I think the best process, so basically the process, you get your passage and then you just spend time with it. And it's definitely a great way to kind of go into this process. And to recap my talk, what I talked about, my main question was, how does the mission of reconciliation change our lives? And that is found in 2 Corinthians 5. And so it's definitely a hefty chapter, you know, it has some content. And so, you know, I think sometimes when you initially read passages, you have one idea of what it looks like. And that was for me. I totally thought this was something else. I saw ambassadors and I was like, oh, this is just classic ambassador talk, classic Matthew 28, you know, Jesus, him saying, let's go out and, you know, it's going to be hard, but let's go do it. You know how Jesus is, and Paul. So I was like, this is the same lines. And then as I'm reading it and, you know, you just kind of get, oh, wait, this is something completely different, which I think is just the beautifulness of rereading that passage and really being immersed in what you're reading and really realizing that the mission of reconciliation is just this idea that because Jesus was crucified and died for our sins, we now have this different relationship with God. And it's so beautiful. He has reconciled himself to us, which is just a cool, which is beautiful and huge fundamental tenet to our faith. And so that was really great to get to really uncover that and really actually realize that is what Paul is saying, not what I was thinking, you know, day one.
Right. So are you telling that basically the experience that you had initially was like you really did just sort of recognize a word and you're saying ambassadors, and then you sort of import all of this sort of assumed knowledge of what that means, and then what that means in general, maybe what it means specifically as a Christian, and then sort of, I guess, just went breeze right by it. You're like, oh, I kind of know what this means, and there's no need to dive deeply into the text because there's that word there, I kind of already know what it means.
Right. This is not a great, like, I don't recommend that practice either. Like, but it just happens from, you know, having multiple Bible studies. You're like, oh, I see grace. I know exactly what this means, you know? Let me just stop that analyzation, like, right now. That's all I need is, like, those vocab words. So I think that sometimes, that sometimes happens. We key into this one part of the passage, but it really takes that commitment and diligence to really go through it and comb over it multiple times to really hear what the Holy Spirit is trying to tell us through this passage. So I think that's a really big thing. Part of my process, that was really big.
Totally. Yeah, and I feel like it's almost impossible to recommend that process because I think that's just what we do.
Right.
You know, it's like, just you didn't choose. I don't think you chose to do that. You know, it's, and I feel like,
I wanna read this
do you guys
wrong.
Know the words for this? Like, is it heuristics? Is it paradigms? Do you, like, are you in the social science, like social, like not social psychology, but like the, I don't even know what field I'm talking about, but where we sort of have these like paradigms, or I think those two words I said, paradigms and heuristics, make sense. But it's like you because you can't just go through the world looking at everything critically all the time. You have to like, your brain starts to make assumptions. Your brain starts to fill in the gaps, right? I'm not smart. Paige, you're smart. Am I saying things okay so far?
I mean, don't just check with me. Like, it sounded great, but
well,
I don't want to be the
Kyle knows how to build a bridge. You study your body, okay? Like, okay, yeah. All right, so you and
that
I, we'll be on a bridge with our Bibles, giving people science lessons, and but yeah, your brain. I mean, we just make sense of the world, and then our brain's like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna put that on autopilot, and so I can like, you know, not step in this hole that I'm gonna walk into, or whatever. But so I just think it's challenging because I feel like almost like what you're saying, and like this is what I've thought about this quite a bit, is like what we know about the scriptures sometimes betrays us getting to actually hear what they're saying. That didn't make any sense. But like it's almost like if you know a little bit, that can be dangerous. Cause then you might think that everything else that you read in the scriptures is reinforcing that same point over and over and over again, when there might be more nuance, there might be more depth to something.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Does that match your experience?
Yeah, no, and I what you said too, I was about to hick on, because I think once you read it once, sometimes we reaffirm what we read the first time. And so I think that is like the biggest thing too, is sometimes after multiple readings, you have to tell yourself, read this with a fresh mind. And I think that is an important thing, even if this is your, you know, 20th reading, you know, sometimes, you know, just like really, sometimes it's important to really see, like, am I noticing the correct things? Is this really what's going on? Like, why is this said in this way? And so I think that sometimes helps kind of take yourself out of your own perspective of, oh, this is for sure what it's going to say. And I'm just going to reaffirm that by reading it the exact same way 5, 6, 7, 8 times. So sometimes kind of, you have to take yourself out of that sometimes to really dive into the scriptures better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one reason that Stanford always talks about like multisensory engagement with the text, you know, it's like, just like use a different part of your brain, like write it out, or like use different colors, or speak it, you know, those kinds of things. It's like, we're used to just reading the same thing over and over. You know, our minds also have these like mental like pathways, you know? And so it's like, if we read the text, we're just gonna walk down the same path, when like Kyle, maybe he gets up one morning and he goes a different direction on his 30-second walk and sees a different
the other side of the block.
Tree
yeah.
that he didn't. Yeah, you know?
That's true.
I wonder if this is why Bible studies are boring. This kind of thing that we're talking about.
Wow, bold statement.
I know.
You don't like Bible studies?
Bible studies can be boring. Mm-hmm. And they're boring precisely when nobody has anything interesting to say about the text.
Or when everyone has the same interesting thing to say about the text.
Yeah.
I think you can definitely influence each other when you're doing a Bible study to kind of all read the same way.
Yes, that's true. It just sometimes feels to me, sometimes in Bible studies, if I'm surveying my whole landscape of being in Bible studies as a Christian, it's like when you read the text and then it's like people just don't have any real thoughts on it. It's sort of like, to me, it's like, wait, what's going on? Like, do you see that this is saying this like something that you don't seem to agree with, you know? Or you know, this is a very challenging thing, and if we're not wrestling with it, do we really understand it?
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's that impulse to sort of like, oh, I think I probably know what this means because I know what grace means, or know what ambassador means. You know, I kind of know what this text is. instead of sort of assuming, I probably don't know what this text says. You know, there's probably a layer here that I'm not fully aware of, even whether it may be like the local context or ancient context or different language things, you know, all sorts of things. But I do wonder if there's a humility arrogance thing that's here too. It's like having humility before the text of like, I actually assume there's not a lot that I can just know based on, I don't know. Cause I want people to think that they can actually go and read the scriptures and get something out of it. I don't know. We're going on and on. Do you have what else do you want to say about your process, Paige? Don't let me steal your thunder.
No, you're good. But yes, yeah, so that was basically kind of the initial step, you know, in coming into this main idea, which was really important. And then, and then you get to go into the commentaries and get like support from the talk and things like that, which is really great. And it's definitely interesting. I think what's most interesting is seeing how things will land in the talk. So sometimes I'll joke, sometimes I'll josh. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if anyone else will also enjoy this. I don't know if this is just for myself or for other people. So that's definitely, so that's what's really nice with the practice talks too, is going like, does this make sense to other people? Or is this just totally my own personal sense of humor? And then just other substance things also, just checking with that. So that was most like the process and stuff, which I totally loved. It's one of those things that I think this is such a unique way to look at the scriptures, like we were kind of talking about before, and to be able to have this opportunity and to kind of go through this and with lots of support and having groups of students to helping you with your practice talks, giving feedback, you know, just that collaborative aspect is so interesting. And it's, you know, you're not going to really get this at your own Bible study. This is something that's really unique and takes lots of commitment and takes time, because we all committed to this and started beginning of winter quarter. So this is, you know, months of work and months of collaboration now being out in the open.
Totally. Mm. I don't think we've talked about this much on the podcast yet. Can you share a little bit about what the practice talk was like? And the reason I ask is I remember the practice talk being hard for me when I was giving my first sermon in college life. But now it's like I've been to so many, I sort of don't remember the emotional experience. And so the collaboration is good, but sometimes painful, right? Because it's like now other people get to have a say in what you are doing. So I'd love to hear from you, if possible, to recreate what it was like to be in the practice talk.
Let me set the scene,
And in light of you saying it's a good thing to have collaboration.
Yeah, no, for sure. So basically, you have your draft and you get that all ready. And then typically you'll have, you know, Stanford and Peter, and then a few other folks from the preaching class. You go through your talk. Typically you don't need the slides or things like that. It's mostly just the substance of the talk, which I think is actually important to have, because I think it's good to see how your talk lands without visual demonstration, so that then you just like add to it, you know, during the talk. So I don't think it's like super, that's like a weird note that I just mentioned. But anyway, let's go back to the main subject. So you go through your talk, and then basically you just go through every section. Stanford will give you your stats, which is like how long each section was, like intro, first illustration, first point, conclusion, stuff like that. So you can kind of see where you land. And then we all just kind of talk through it point by point. So intro, how did that first illustration go? How did the first point go? Second, and people are typically giving feedback, and you can kind of read their respond or kind of like chat to see more what would be better, kind of. And sometimes it's like a discussion of, hey, maybe this point needs to be clearer. So how can we kind of fix that? Or maybe this illustration, you can kind of be like, hey, this wasn't like, this was good, but let's fix this aspect, things like that. So it could be a little daunting though, because you're kind of in this draft for a long time. And then, you know, it just,
and other people are not. That's the thing. You know, it's like you've spent tons of time in this passage. Other people haven't. You give your talk, and then they're like, I don't think you made the point in point three like you thought. You know, like, so I'm actually curious to know, like, what happened in your soul? Like, did you find yourself railing against the I'm just projecting on to you what happens to me.
I cut off, like, all my connections.
How generous did you feel of heart when people were giving feedback? How was that to you?
Because in some aspect, this is your word child. So you're kind of, you know, really sensitive around what this is. Everyone talks about drafts that way. And so I think initially, I think I really told myself I have to go in, you know, being really open, because at the end of the day, you want to make sure this lands well, because you can have all these amazing thoughts and all these great illustrations, but if no one gets what you're talking about, it doesn't make any sense. There's no point. Not that there's no point. That's a little maybe pessimistic. But
yeah, you know, the Holy Spirit is powerful, but we want to be faithful in doing what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's the nuance. That you're looking. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. That's my translator. And so I think for me, the practice talk was really helpful. And I appreciate hearing little feedback and things like that. I was also typically when I do things like this, I'm really excited to just go straight in and be like, this is all the stuff that I saw. And I just want to go into that. And then sometimes you have to have people tell you, hey, maybe explain what you're talking about. I'm like, oh, who would have thought that? Who would have thought that, you know?
Oh, or yeah. Like, I remember that from like, your practice talk. Yes. You had it was like an assumption of knowledge about the text already.
Yeah, right? which don't assume things, you know, just give it to folks on a plate.
No, and but so I think that's great. What I just said there was not like, wow, how remember when you made that mistake? It was just like that's such a
I do remember it.
Typical, you know, kind of classic kind of thing. And then such a great thing to be told in collaboration, like, oh, actually, I think I would need my hand held a little more, you know?
Yes. No, totally. Because especially sometimes you don't realize you're doing those things.
Good stuff, Paige.
Yeah.
Kyle, sorry, we've left you in the dust. Tell us totally about, fine. Man, sip some Recappuccino with us, man. Tell us about your experience. What was the best, most surprising part of this process for you?
Right. I would love to sip some Recappuccino with you guys.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's my favorite order at every coffee shop.
You actually do order a cappuccino.
I do.
I went with you to Mishka's and you got a cappuccino and they put a little chocolate covered coffee bean, espresso bean.
Oh yeah.
On top.
I love
what a touch.
Mishka's. Yeah. 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 Cappuccino is the best way to start at any coffee shop because it just shows you like, you know, it has a good amount of coffee flavor, but it's not like too much. Got a little bit of milk. I think a latte is just milk. I will not order lattes personally.
Hot takes right
cappuccino
here.
Is, that's just the way that I go.
Just roast every coffee menu.
Yeah.
It's on every coffee menu. I'd highly recommend getting a cappuccino. Anyway, yeah, my process preparing my talk I think is pretty interesting, and I didn't always even know where it would end up. Like, even if I would do a talk, and I'll explain what I mean by that. So, I chose my passage in the middle of winter quarter, and my passage was 2 Corinthians 4. Originally, it was just 2 Corinthians 4:4, which I actually only ended up barely mentioning in my talk. Mm-hmm. But 2 Corinthians 4 is about our present weakness and how that lives into our resurrection life.
I'm going to read 2 Corinthians 4:4. And maybe people will see why you wanted to preach this, because it's so strange. It says, well, there's a little bit of buildup, but it says, and even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. And that blinding of the minds of the unbelievers, I think, was pretty compelling to you, if I recall.
Oh, absolutely. That is what stuck out to me. And I was just, when I read that, I was like, why? I thought it was saying God has blinded people from seeing his own light. Mm-hmm. And immediately I thought of Pharaoh and how in the Exodus story, God was hardening Pharaoh's heart at certain points. And sometimes Pharaoh was hardening his own heart. And I thought, oh, this is going to be such an interesting talk about like about why God would ever do things like that. And I thought I could get really into it. But I only ended up barely mentioning it because the more I read it, the more I read through this chapter, the more I realized that's not the interesting part of the chapter. And
that's
actually
so cool.
Yeah, it actually doesn't even mean what I thought it meant. So in reading it over and over, it sounded like they weren't talking about our God in verse 4, especially because if you look at the wording, the God of this age is not capitalized, but every other G is capitalized in God. Mm. And so I thought that was interesting. So I was looking at a few commentaries, and apparently this was not something that was super interesting to some other commentators, and they were like, oh yeah, clearly this is just Satan blinding people's minds. And I'm like, oh, this passage is not saying what I thought it's saying. But it actually fits a lot better into the context. So in reading that commentary, verse 4 went from being the most interesting part of the chapter and the climax of the chapter to being a very interesting supporting point to the main point, which I found to be verse 7, which is, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. And that is really what I ended up doing my talk on. But it was an interesting process because I went weeks, just like, I read this quite a few times. I did a little bit of journaling on it, and then I kind of stopped. I got a little overwhelmed with school. So, yeah, I didn't do too much with this whole preaching class until a couple of weeks into spring quarter. And I found that every time I would think about this passage, I would get really anxious and I would not be excited about sharing this word with the community. And so I reached out to Peter and Stanford and I said, like, here's what I'm feeling. I'm not sure if I should even continue to do this talk because, like, I feel so bad. Like, I've been talking to Stanford and Peter for like 2 years now about, I'm so excited to do this preaching class. And now I find myself in this position where I just don't want to think about this passage, let alone preaching it to people. Because it just reminds me of my own failure to prepare correctly. And so I met up with you, Peter, and Stanford, and I found that you were both really encouraging, and you kind of pointed me back to the reality of what was happening, and you gave me options, one of which was just, don't do this talk, but the other option would be to adjust it to something that is more suited to things that I might not find anxiety-inducing.
Right.
Like leading worship and and just doing music. And maybe that could be a way to give people a bit of a break from maybe just like super intellectually heavy talks. And we could do more of an affective night. So that is kind of what I was ending up doing. I chose three songs that I thought related well to passages within this chapter, and then I kind of let that guide the night. And I wanted to give people time to just reflect on this. And I thought it worked out really well because this passage is really something that you don't have to think exactly about the theology as much as just the comfort that God wants to give you about suffering, especially when you're suffering in the name of Christ. But the story is not quite over there. Because I felt better, I moved on, and I did a little bit more prep. And then we could fast forward to a week before my talk, and I get this fun little text in the morning from Peter saying, like, hey, we're a week out from the talk. Have you thought about, like, doing a practice talk? And I was like, ah, talk. Right. Forgot about that. And I had nothing prepared again. But I spent the next week just absolutely immersed.
A star pupil. In this star.
Clearly, you can start to see a bit of my personality in this story. But I ended up living in this passage for a whole week, and I grew to love it and see it in my daily life. And I began to see it in my own sufferings, in the whole situation that God was kind of putting me in about this talk.
It's interesting. Sorry to butt in on you, Kyle, but it's interesting because, like, you say that you, like, lived with this talk for, like, a week, which is true. It seems like you probably hyper-lived with it, like, intensely for a week. But also because you introduced it to yourself, like, months ago, like, you've also had, like subconscious, unconscious, whatever, like, thinking about it, too, I'm sure. Like, you've actually, you've known it for quite a while. Then you had, like, it was like you went on a little retreat with the talk. It's like you're, like, sort of distant friends, and then you went on a retreat and you became good friends.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was definitely experiencing.
Like a camp. You had like a camp high with this.
It was like houseboats talk. For scripture.
Honestly, that is definitely what it ended up being like. But yeah, I spent a week in this passage. I grew to love it. And the more that I read into it, the more that I saw that God was speaking to my own personal situation. clearly God had been like working through this whole situation. And I gave the talk, and I hope that it gave people a little bit of peace about maybe some of their sufferings, maybe some of their situations. I found it definitely gave me peace, and it gave me a new kind of understanding about just struggle.
Dude, could you get any more specific on like taking us into what, when you say that it felt like the passage was speaking to sort of what you were dealing with, like tell us about that. Is there a way that you can sort of peel back the curtain of your life, show us a little bit of like, how did it seem like it entered into your life and when you were given it?
Right. So Paul says that we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. And we've heard this passage many times. I've heard many different talks on it. And I think there's a reason we love it so much. And that's because that's not the way that I normally think about my sufferings. I normally think about like, oh, if I get anxious, like that is something that God can work like despite of. Kind of like he can work despite the fact that I'm going to fail him many, many times. But in reading this passage over and over again, I saw that Paul is very intentional about his wording to show that like we have these weaknesses and sufferings on purpose. You know, God puts them in our lives often on purpose to show us, sometimes to give us a little bit of humility, to show that, you know, God is the one who's going to bring himself glory. Like, you are not the one who's going to create the glory for God.
Yeah.
And that is something that can be difficult at times, depending on where you are mentally, or it can be relieving at times.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of weight off of your shoulders, or off of my shoulders is what it did. And so, yeah, I found that that was very comforting to find. He talks a lot more in this passage about, you know, especially when you're suffering in the name of Christ, that's not something that is meaningless. It's actually, there's some spiritual connection between your suffering for Christ and your reliving the death of Christ so that you can kind of bring life to other people in the same way that Jesus does for you and for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That always seems like good news to me as an insider, and I always feel like it's just terrible PR for the faith of like just like talking about suffering, like acknowledging the suffering will happen. Certainly want people to go into believing in Jesus with eyes wide open that it's not going to be easy, but it always feels, whenever I hear it, I'm like, oh gosh, what does that sound like to a non-Christian? What does that sound like to someone who's not in the story, you know? But it's there, it's like, it's all over the place, you know, especially in Paul and in Peter, and I mean, this promise of suffering and this making sense of it. Man, yeah, big time. I even heard you say something like, you know, maybe God puts these things in our lives, and then immediately like that could jump someone to be like, well, is God putting them there? Like, what's the providence conversation here?
Right.
And it's almost just like, God, are we invited to think that? Are we invited to ask that question? Like, not that we shouldn't ask the question, but like, how important is it? You know, do we have to parse the metaphysics of like, did God do this to us, or is this just sort of the way it is and God can use it? Is there something in between? I don't know, you know, but doesn't seem like that's what Paul's trying to get at in this particular text. But it's interesting how it's almost like there's a few sets of questions that like every sentence a Christian says about the text can like upscale to that question. Like, is it like providence, predestination, evil? Like these kinds of things always seem to get in the way of us just sort of reading what is there.
And that's the, I mean, that's the nice thing that like Kyle was saying too, is the hope. This is supposed to be, even though this is talking about suffering, it's supposed to be a hopeful passage, which is one of those things where it's like, sometimes it's not that theology is not important, obviously, but it's one of those things like sometimes you just need to have that hope and have that peace from the Father and just be reminded of that. You know, sometimes it doesn't need to be a huge lesson of what is really going on. Sometimes it's just important to realize that our God is there for us, and the suffering is that we're experiencing is in a total different lens of what is actually going on. And and God knows that. We need to put our trust in who can actually totally see this in a full, I don't know, 360 perspective, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. What I loved about reading this passage that Paul wrote is that he never shies away from his suffering, right? He makes it clear, like, this suffering is extremely obvious to everyone. There's so much darkness. that you're going to experience in this life. And I think that's part of what he's talking about with, like, blinding the unbelievers. A lot of times this suffering can feel so dark and all engulfing, right, that it can seem like that's the only thing. But he, yeah, his hope, his kind of message in this whole passage is that, like, yes, this is what it looks like on the outside. It's very easy to see the darkness. It's very easy to point that out. But it's harder to point out the light that is, it can seem dimmer at times, but at a much deeper level, it's much truer than this kind of surface level darkness that can appear in our sufferings.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've sort of moved into percolating on pericopes, which I'm totally fine with. But I'm going to ask you a question. This is improv now. We haven't talked about this. But like, nice. So one thing I really loved about your talk, Kyle, was the way that you sort of recounted Paul's suffering. You know, you had a few sections in there where you sort of reminded us of, like, this is what Paul has been through for the sake of Christ, you know, which is bonkers to me that even though I've heard similar lists and know these stories, it's like when I'm reading Ephesians or when I'm reading, maybe Ephesians is the wrong example, but if I'm reading Galatians or something like that, it's like I'm not picturing that this is Paul, the one who has gone through all these things. I'm just like picturing generic theological thinker.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this question. If we're purely thinking what is the most psychologically helpful for Christians right now, do you think that it's psychologically helpful to be reminded of all that Paul went through? Because it's like, man, this person like suffered with Christ big time, and yet he is able to still, you know, rejoice or give God praise. So, so the conclusion could be, obviously, my suffering ought not concern me to the point of giving up my faith or something like that. Or is it psychologically unhelpful? And maybe the thinking is like, well, Paul went through so much more and seems to be on fire for God. I'm going through a little bit of stress and feel like I'm ready to give up my faith. Like, clearly something's wrong here. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it nice to know that Paul went through all this suffering, or is it somehow discouraging? Because it's like, that's way more than I've gone through, and yet I'm like dying over here. Does that make sense?
Yes. I don't know if it's psychologically helpful or unhelpful. That depends on who's hearing it. I think it's extremely psychologically relevant, though, to think about Paul's suffering specifically and to read this passage in context, to know that, like, this person who's talking to you about his suffering knows a thing or two about suffering, right? Like, he was beaten nearly to death many times. He's almost died for Christ. He's dealt with so much, like, emotional trauma and just dealing with, like, not knowing who you can trust exactly.
Yeah.
He's gone through all of this, and yet he still has hope. I think that, for me, was extremely helpful, not in showing me that, like, oh, hey, my sufferings are so small, therefore, like, I'm weak. But it, like, reading this passage helped me see that Paul's wisdom, it scales all the way from, you know, I look at Paul and, like, Jesus' sufferings as maybe an upper limit of suffering that we could possibly go through before literally dying. And I could look, sometimes I feel like I look at myself as the lower limit of suffering, where it's like, oh, wow, all my struggles are so small. I'm just worried about this little assignment. But Paul is still speaking to those struggles there, too. He's not saying, look at my struggles, therefore, you got nothing. He's saying, look at the way that Jesus has been working through me. It's the same Jesus working in you. You know, whether your struggles are as small as just like a little assignment or like a little argument you got into, or if they're as big as, you know, literally getting shipwrecked and living in the ocean. And that's actually where I got the inspiration for my illustration, which was a kid looking down at a zip line and just thinking, like, it's the biggest thing in the world. This is the biggest worry that he could possibly have.
Yeah.
And that's real. But, you know, the reality is that he was fully safe. And the reality is that I am fully safe as well in a spiritual sense.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Right. The answer to my question was somehow part of the whole conception of your talk. You know, it's like you had the camper being so terrified of this particular challenge, you, the counselor, being like, dude, I see that people do this all the time. Like, not a big deal. You know, you're so worried about this. And then you scale that up to, like, I'm sure your zip lines and your world to someone else, like, dude, this is fine. You know, you're going to be okay. That's really interesting. That's mm-hmm. a good answer. Paige, do you have thoughts on my improv question?
Yeah, I think it's so easy for us to compare to each other. And this is, and not even with like in light of Paul suffering, but even just in other things in general, this talk, like that Kyle's yeah. talking about, you know, someone, you know, maybe not doing as well in a class. Oh, like, and then someone's comparing it. Well, I'm doing awful in class, like pity mm-hmm. me more, or just like kind of like this, you know, and this is, that was such like a small example. There's so many other things I could have utilized that were maybe more relevant.
No, totally. Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, we all have at some aspect, some point of suffering, or will at some point have these hard moments in life. But I think Kyle sums it up perfectly now and in his talk of this idea of there is a greater picture going on here that mm-hmm. is not belittling your suffering in any way and not invalidating mm-hmm. it, but just, and like, it's just adding to this idea, like you are suffering and there is a bigger thing going on right now that you can't always yeah. comprehend or might not ever comprehend, but mm-hmm. we have a Father who is all knowing and all powerful, and he mm-hmm. is able to mm-hmm. protect us.
Yeah. It does seem like that is the response that God gives to Job. It's like, yeah, you have all these critiques of me and how things are going, but you just don't have my perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems right. like that seems to be a lot of what, like at the end of Job, after you've made it through all those chapters mm-hmm. of wrestling and arguing, Job. And then Job finally sort of explodes to God. And yeah, it is, it's really compelling. It's like, you just don't, who are you? You know, like what is your vision compared to my vision and perspective compared to my perspective? But that's a really good point, mm-hmm. Paige. Take us into your passage. Take us back into 2 Corinthians 5. Can you percolate on some pericopes? And really, again, what this section is just for is like, you all have spent a lot of time in this text and you were not mm-hmm. able to give us everything you knew or everything you learned or thought was interesting. And right. so just wanted to give you some space to keep the education going. Right. Keep percolating.
Sure. So I think the funny thing with my talk is that because I had such a strong idea of what I thought this passage was, a lot of the things that didn't make mm-hmm. it, it's a good thing that it didn't make it, because it was not what yeah. the whole message of this talk was. The whole message is this mission of reconciliation, this idea that, you know, we now have a different relationship with the Father, and it's so wonderful. And so my initial ideas are just like, yeah, Christianity's hard, you know, like, but we got to be Christ ambassadors. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, sure, but that's not the main thing that's going on. So this is a very interesting section mm-hmm. for me, because I feel like a lot of the illustrations I had and the points that I had, it just did not, it would not have done this passage any service. So it's kind of probably a good thing that I'm missing a few things from my initial drafts or thoughts and things like that. So I'm fine yeah. with that. But yeah, so definitely those are a few things, but I feel like the things I do have, you know, I am glad that they're there and probably serve the passage a little bit more justice than my initial thoughts on this reading.
Interesting. So again, you're sort of talking about like the initial reading you had sort of compared to a future deeper reading.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So can you try your, like, if you were to say, okay, like first page thought this about the passage, second page thought this about the passage. Like what did second page end up thinking about
a timeline,
the text that seemed like it was missing from first page's thoughts?
Yeah, I guess like going back to what we kind of talked about earlier today, it's this idea, like, I think, you know, you kind of have like those trigger words, you see things that are in the passage, but sometimes you're already so set on one narrative of it, it doesn't really come to full light. But I think what really kind of turned the page, you want to keep going on that, you know, fun imagery, is, you know, like, the mission reconciliation has reconciliation repeated quite a bunch of times. And so I think sometimes it's, well, once again, it's those, you know, Bible trigger words, I guess, are kind of like, okay, that's a biblical thing. That's great. And then, you yeah. know, and then we're going to move on to what I was thinking initially, but then reading reconciliation again, really getting into that picture. And I think the biggest thing for me that really got into this idea too, is that, you know, Christ reconciled us to himself. And I think really reading that kind of changed the direction of the passage I was going toward and being like, this is something much greater. And so having that initial idea is really good. And then that's when the commentaries and the additional support and the practice talks come in, because then that kind of crystallizes what was initially thought of and what kind of like really changed from the readings. And then adding that
yeah.
brings a more solidified and concrete idea of what this passage is really saying, which is all important stuff, all good stuff.
Yeah. Did you find it hard to Like the phrase, the Ministry of Reconciliation, or I think you've said the
mission.
Mission of Reconciliation. Yeah. Because the sentence would read something sort of different to you if it was just like Christ reconciled us to himself and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because the idea of reconciliation, of like reestablishing this like broken relationship, it's like, oh, that makes a ton of sense of like how God is doing, how Jesus is doing that for us with God. It's like we have this broken relationship, now Jesus has made it, has reconciled it. Mm-hmm. But then this phrase like mission of reconciliation or ministry of reconciliation, now it seems like we've been entrusted with something to go then do.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so there's this atonement stuff with like how Jesus does something for us on the cross, reconciles us. But then there's also this like ethics and sanctification and like what are we supposed to do with it? And did you find it hard to determine – or did you find it hard to – which one to talk about? Like, because there's one that's like past looking and there's one that's future looking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that adds to just also the significance of this passage too. There's so much, because this is such a fundamental idea to Christianity. Yeah. Like this is, you know, like a big thing in the faith. And so there is that aspect that sometimes you don't include things, partly because there's certain things I wanted to focus on. Mostly the focus was to just bringing back this idea that, you know, even though like there's so much complexity to this idea, there is an essence. This is typically like the first thing you learn as a Christian, that, you know, Jesus died for you. And then now we have this different relationship, and it's almost like Christianity lesson mm-hmm. number one. And then you kind of move on to bigger yeah. things and you move on to different stuff. And so it's like, even though this is such a fundamental, and you, like you're mentioning too, there's all these different aspects to this passage. Sometimes, you know, I think it kind of, unfortunately, it gets like overlooked. So I think sometimes the things that
yeah.
I didn't add were partly because I wanted to come back to the central idea that this is so important and it gets so overlooked because it's kind of like, oh, yeah. like we all know that. And there's sometimes some focuses, especially like you know, like Kyle and I who are in college, you know, we're undergrads, we're learning all this stuff. We're, you know, we're here to pursue an education. And so, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes like these, like going into college mm-hmm. life, it's like, we have to pursue all this new stuff. Like people are coming from all different backgrounds of Christianity, you know, or encounters of the faith. And so it's yeah. like, there's this yearning to like learn so much stuff, to what's the next new theology book? What's the next new stuff? You know, what's hot off mm-hmm. the press, as the kids say.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, you know what, like the goal of Christianity is not to learn everything. You know, the goal of Christianity is to fall in love with God mm-hmm. and what he's done for us. And so I think my goal of the talk was to kind of bring that back to light and to bring back the significance and the importance. So some things where it came to like the ethics, the sanctification, I just felt like what I really wanted to focus on is just reminding people that this is not something that should just go away, or something that you kind of hide back in your old introductory Christianity notebooks and stuff. This is something that should stay with you in such a significant way.
Man, that's really profound. What it sounds like you're communicating is that, like, yeah, we could have gone a lot of different directions in this talk, and mm-hmm. there might be some more like cutting edge kind of thinking that we could be doing of what it means to have the ministry of reconciliation. You can maybe be edgier, or you could be more, I don't know, you could talk about a different, you can call people to action in a way that could be provocative or yeah. super inspiring. Or you could say, whoa, like this is built on, like anything that I would have said then is built on this fundamental thing that happened because Jesus reconciled us to God. And mm-hmm. our ethics and like who we will become will probably not be determined based on our theology of these things. Who we become will probably be determined on how much we like love this story and like yeah. inculcate this particular story into our lives, make it like the lens through which we see ourselves, the lens through which we see other people. So it's like, okay, let's like, not that it's bad to start thinking about like the implications of this, but let's just stop and look at this and gaze at it again.
Yeah.
And you know, I might be putting words into your mouth or words into your mind or motives into your mind, but it's a little bit like, maybe that will end up being the thing that will motivate faithful action more than trying to focus on the faithful action. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. That makes sense.
It's a little bit of like the, you know, you've heard me say this before, but like we tend to think that it's what we think that makes us who we are, right? Mm. Like it's our ideas. It's the things that we think are true.
Yeah.
When I think there's a compelling reason to think perhaps it's the things that we love, it's the things that we long for,
right,
that ends up determining sort of who we become.
Right.
And so if we try hard to make this story of Jesus reconciling us to God the thing that we love and long for, it's something I pray for every day, to like love this stuff more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting way to conceive of doing a sermon, you know?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Good job by you, Paige.
Thank you. Yeah, so that was one thing that I feel like I just really wanted to, like, this was the focus of the passage. So sometimes there's just so many things you can do in a talk, but, you know, you only have so much time. You also don't want to, you know, not speak on things and not give it the focus that it here, like, that it needs, like, requires. Like, that was, like, another aspect that I kind of forgot to mention until now, that, you know, my question for the talk was, how does the mission of reconciliation change our lives? And, you know, I feel like sometimes we get these talks of, like, it does change your life, and then that's it. And you don't have to get, like, sometimes, like, huge application. And so part of that was, like, oh, my goodness, I don't know if I have, like, that application part, because that's part of, like, that's, like, my question. And, you know, like, part of it, I was, like, you know, like, it's just we're walking into a new way. Our relationship, as I said in my talk, it goes from long distance to local. But I think there sometimes wasn't, like, those tangible, what does that look like on a daily basis? But I think the perk of speaking at the end of these student talks is we've already seen so many examples of how to live. How does the mission reconciliation change our lives? Well, go to week two, go to week five of these talks, you know, learn about how to, you know, endure suffering, learn how to love people when it's hard, learn how to utilize your spiritual gifts. Like, that's all the stuff that, you know, if I were to try to include in my talk, would just be like, you know, maybe a bullet point list that I would email out to people, or I would go in so much detail. I'm not even like focusing on what I'm trying to say. So that's, you know, that's kind of like a good thing to kind of utilize. So like, maybe I'm like the thesis at the end, you know, where it's like, here's all my points. And then here's the main thesis. Like, this is why it all matters, is mission reconciliation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We were talking yesterday about if we had called this whole series the Ministry of Reconciliation, then all the other talks could have been subpoints of, like, here's how you play this out, you know?
Right.
We should have done that. That would have been smart.
It's okay. We're mentioning it now.
And it all leads
up to Paige. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We're all the opening act. That's really what it was.
Can you imagine a concert?
That is, though. It
here's
is frustrating.
The next opening act.
Yeah.
Here's the
yeah.
seven
yeah.
opening acts.
Here's this. Exactly.
It is frustrating when the, like, application part of the sermon, it feels like it's like, man, we have way too much to say than can fit into, like, this, like, 3-minute conclusion. So what do? Do I give a really shallow application, you know, or do I try to build it out? But then obviously that takes more time, and you know, that can be
do
tricky.
I speak so for
it's,
two
if
hours?
You're like, dude,
yeah.
Dude, if living out the ministry of reconciliation, that's like another word for, like, how do you be a Christian? And so how do you do that? Yeah, anyway, I get that.
Yeah.
Kyle, did you want to percolate anymore?
Yeah. I mean, my passage was also quite deep, and I found it pretty fundamental to just how we live. I definitely found the most trouble in trying to narrow down my application.
Yeah.
One thing that stuck out to me more and more as I read this passage that I percolated on, that, you know, if I had 2 hours to talk on this, I would have gone into, is that the more that I read this passage, and this was a little hard for me to read, but it seemed more and more like Paul, when he's talking about this suffering that we go through, this living the death of Christ so that we can also live the life of Christ, the more and more I read it, the more I saw that he's really talking about suffering for Christ, and that made it difficult to come up with my application, because at first I thought, like, oh, this is a passage about, you know, general hope. When you're feeling down, when you're suffering, it's all good. Jesus has got you. And that is true. But what Paul is saying here is largely about working, like, in ministry, whether that's, you know, vocational or just interpersonally, and you're suffering for Christ, then that is when Jesus is going to be shining through you the most. He's not exactly saying that this explains all suffering in the world. And so that's something that I wrestled with a lot, and that, you know, you could write a whole different talk about, just to specify not all suffering is the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a bit of a call to action that, like, hey, make sure that you are still living for Christ. And this is when you're going to be finding his rest and when you're going to be finding his peace, the more that you live into the life of Christ and his own sufferings. Hmm. That was definitely something that I wish I had more time to talk about and get into the weeds about. Just, it requires a whole lot of nuance that 30 minutes was just not enough time for, especially with this more affective focus on, like, spending time to just reflect in song, because, it, you know, it would have required a lot of words. But, I'm still very glad that we had this time to be reflecting in song.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other thing that I would have talked about, I think, is there's a real focus on... I really wanted to say something about if you... At certain times, it's very important to take time to just lament and to just, you know, vent your troubles to God.
Yeah.
And I think my second section, which was, you know, talking about carrying around the death of Christ, that would be where I would put it. I kind of put it there with our second song, which kind of recounts this story of Job, where, like, he's gone through all this suffering and he just goes through this lament prayer and God ends up kind of, like, verbally going off on this guy, just kind of destroying Job, being like, hey, where were you when I made all this stuff? You do not see the full intentions that I have for all of this. You don't see the perspective that I have on all of this. And it is beautiful, even though all you can see right now is darkness. So I would have definitely talked about, like, yeah, what's it look like to be lamenting well? I would have loved to talk about that too.
Yeah. What I thought of when you were talking about your first one was this idea of this, like, distinction of suffering. And I think what I hear you saying is, like, there is a sort of generic suffering of bad things happening to you. Maybe you have cancer, get cancer, right? Really bad thing. Mm-hmm. And so you read a text like the one that you were talking about, and you see the word suffering, and you sort of import the bad things happening in your life to that word, when it seems like, and that's, it sounds like what you were doing at the in your process. And then you're like, actually, it sounds like Paul's talking about a narrower form of suffering, which is suffering sort of for the sake of Christ, you know, suffering in the work of Christ. Or, and I wonder if you could include, like, just suffering that comes from obedience, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, maybe you tell the truth about something and get fired, or maybe you tell the truth about something and a relationship dies, or something like that. You know, like, there's a suffering that comes sometimes from faithfulness. And, man, you know what I was thinking about is, like, that the sense of, like, that doesn't preach as well as a talk on more general suffering. And there is sometimes that bent towards, like, well, this is kind of related, and it preaches very, very well to talk about, like, God being there in, like, all of your suffering. But that's just not what's happening in the text, you know? And the temptation that there can be to, like, just say that which is better to say, or, like, easier to say, or...
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, man. Gosh, that's... We're so human.
We're so human. I mean, life...
Yeah.
Life is super hard.
Yeah.
I mean, even when you're not, you know, suffering specifically for your obedience, it's gonna be super hard, and it's gonna be easy to, like, want to preach to that just general suffering, because there's so much of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's unfortunately not exactly what is being talked about in this passage. But I think it is still equally hope-giving.
Yeah.
It just requires a little bit more action, which I think connects it a little bit more to reality than just saying, you know, things look bad, but they're actually not bad. They're actually good.
Right.
And I don't think that's, you know, exactly what's being said.
Mm. Mm. Man, that's really good. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Hey, do you guys have favorite parts of your talks?
Ooh, yes.
Where you just thought, like, man, that was a great sentence. That was a great idea. I love that. Why don't you let us know? Paige, one of mine was your hot take on The Notebook.
Yes.
Oh, that was good.
For sure.
It's opening line, guns blazing.
Right.
Just tearing down a sacred cow for many romance movies lovers.
For folks who didn't know, I now hate The Notebook. And I verbalized that in my talk as my first sentence. Which I also liked. A lot of people agreed. But of course, we had Mia, who loves love, who just hated that I said that. but that's fine. But I think so that was a cool part. That was great. But I think what I truly enjoyed from my talk is kind of personalizing this. There's like that illustration that we have of the bridge of, you know, like there's a gap between us and God. So we have us on one side and there's God on the other. Mm-hmm. And then we have this chasm in the middle that's like, you know, sin, death, hell, whatever the illustrator wants to put there. And then we have this bridge that's supposed to be Jesus. And then like we're going over the bridge to God because we have, you know, the resurrection. And that's, you know, our little, like, that's the bridge is the gap. But it's so like automatic. It's so just A plus B equals C, you know, C is Christ. So it's just like, you know, like just like this different stuff. And so I think.
Nice. C is Christ. That's good.
That was some improv right there. But I think what totally lacks from that is just, hey, this is like a real thing going on. This is not just, you know, a little illustration or equation that we have. This is so significant it should really fill us with hope and love. And we should be immensely like loving of that. But I think because it's typically used, you know, and like for like other campus ministries, like I know like some campus ministries, like that's like the illustration that you show and then you get free t-shirt if you're like, I agree with that, you know, but it's like, it's not really getting at the heart of what this is, not to like totally dump on this illustration that's used for many Christians, but
yeah,
I think it kind of undermines the love that we should have and the significance that God has reconciled us to himself. Like, you know, that's something that he has done. We committed the action of sin, but he's the one who has forgave that. Like we did it wrong, but he still is coming to us and reconciling us, which is just so impactful and so important. And so I think that was the thing that I like to uncover, because I think sometimes it's like we have to also fall in love with what we're doing in like this Christianity. And sometimes I think it gets a little automatic, it gets a little more logical and just kind of more thinking than kind of that feeling and emotion.
Gosh, I'm really loving what you're saying, sort of this theme that you have. I love what you said, like make it more personal, because I feel like the image and the equation is so helpful to know, like, oh yeah, here's like the basic idea, but to try to like understand the story, not just understand the equation. Yeah. I think that's really excellent. I really did love in your talk when you had images, like these classic images, and you didn't deconstruct the necessarily the logic of it, but just a little bit deconstructed, like, why do we portray it this way? You know, like it's so impersonal, and sort of wanting to say, this is such a beautiful idea, let's like make it beautiful in the way that we think of it.
And not,
you know?
Yeah, and not only is it beautiful, but we should talk about it all the time. Like, you know, like it's kind of like it shouldn't be just saved for your I don't know, your intro Christianity class, and you're like, okay, like turn in that assignment. Yeah. It's like there's a reason that we have repetitive messages. It's not because we think you're stupid and you forgot it. It's because this is such a fundamental idea to your faith that you should continuously be wanting to learn more about it and kind of like go back to the root of why that's so important and be like, oh yes. Because of this big act that Christ has done for us.
Yeah, that's great. I'm digging that. I'm really digging that. Kyle, what about you? What favorite parts?
From my talk, my favorite part was definitely reflecting on Paul's three words, light and momentary, when describing his sufferings or just sufferings in general. You know, I get, again, like recounting on how many struggles we know that Paul went through. Seeing him call them light and momentary is both shocking and hope-giving, and it really like formed the foundation of my talk. It really gave me the idea of, you know, scaling suffering, that it's not about how big or small your suffering is, because all of it in comparison to what's really going on is just minuscule. It's so tiny. You know, what's happening on the outside, the darkness that we can see is like, it feels overwhelming. But when we are talking about like what's actually happening, it is light and momentary because of our daily renewal in Christ. I found it to be such a beautiful idea.
Yeah. I wonder if there was any amount of suffering that Paul could have endured that he would have said it was not light and momentary, you know? Probably not. You know,
probably it was not.
Probably like this is a theological claim, not just like looking at the world, my suffering is not that bad. It wasn't like my suffering's worse than yours or better than yours. It was just like sort of suffering in this case is in suffering in general, this kind of suffering is light and momentary in comparison to the truth, you know? Interesting, man.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to try to bring us home. So what if we did this? What if we talked about the aftertaste that you're hoping to leave in our minds, I guess, from your talk? Like, if you could control, what's the one thing you hope people remember? What's the one impression you hope people have about the talk? Like, what's the one thing, if we get to remember it in 5 years, what do you hope people remember from your talk?
I've obviously mentioned this a little bit before, but I think it's just, I really want people to come away kind of refreshed and renewed in this idea of taking this, what is typically, you know, the first thing you learn, and kind of really taking it to heart and seeing the significance of it, seeing what it brings to us, and just living into that, knowing that God has done all these things for you. Because of that, like, love the Lord so intently, love that he has done this, love this reconciliation moment, and live like that, like live in this time, like, you know, and in that concept. And, you know, this is not to say that it is bad to learn more, like the theology of Christianity and to have these all these ideas, but to also remember, like, we are coming here as Christians because we love God, and we are, and he has done all these things for us so that we can have this relationship. And just understanding, like, that where it all started, you know, your roots, you know, like the pilot episode, yeah. I guess, like, that's so important, you know, to remember that and to have that. So I hope that people really kind of fall in love with that idea and really take it to heart throughout their walk in Christ.
Yeah. I hope that too with you. Mm-hmm. That's great. Kyle, what about you, man?
Yeah, I hope that the takeaway that people have from my talk/worship set is that, again, there's the suffering that we go through every day, or maybe not on a daily basis, but just like big things that come up in our lives can be so overwhelming that it's hard to see where God is working in our life, and that it's our kind of responsibility to be reminding each other of this beautiful reality that God's renewal of this world and of ourselves is so much truer than the struggles that we're going through. And so it's a responsibility to be reminding each other of that, and also to be putting ourselves in situations and putting ourselves in positions to be reminded of that. You know, I talked a little bit about, you know, tethering yourself to the light.
Yeah.
And that's in many ways, those are just in daily practices, like praying, remembering, you know, tell God about your struggles, tell your friends.
Yeah.
Definitely lean on each other. I think that is what I would hope the takeaway to be.
Yeah. Gosh, so interesting that it's like, it's on one level, a trust in God to, I don't know, show you the light when the hard times come, but also like the classic, like it's both, you know, like also there's some preparation that you can train yourself to try to see the light, you know? And that's good stuff. That's really good stuff. Well, thank you both for your talks. They were nourishing and wonderful and had some crossover, I feel like. Even both of you thinking about, like, oh, on first glance, I thought this passage was saying this, and then end up actually maybe saying something different. And that's, I think that's really thrilling from my perspective of trying to, along with Stanford, trying to teach how to preach, but also teach how to read the scriptures. It's like, yeah, this is the posture maybe we need to have. It's like maybe reading it, having the humility and the tenacity to read it and read it and read it. And again, assume that we might not know everything about it and willing to be surprised by it. And so it's really fun to hear you guys talk about that. But that's enough from me. We want to hear from you, your quarantine corner. Quarantine is sort of coming to a close. So maybe quarantine corner might have to be put to death soon, but you guys can still get yours in while it's still hot. So why don't you give us a quarantine corner? Paige, you keep going first, so maybe Kyle can go first for quarantine corner. Lay it on us, brother.
My quarantine corner is to start drinking cold brew and then stop. drinking cold brew.
Yeah, it's a process, quarantine corner.
So, there's a bit of a story behind this.
Yeah.
You know, school's tough. We don't always have a lot of time. So what I've started doing is buying a whole bag of beans pre-ground, which I would rarely recommend.
I was going to say, that's like not not your style, man.
It's not usually my style. Doing? But when you're going to brew the whole bag in one day or in 2 days, it's
what do you
it's
buy? What where like are you going to Pete's or what are you doing?
Yeah.
So for a cold brew, I've brewed some Pete's. I've brewed 2 bags of Pete's, some Phil's.
Okay.
I have not brewed Temple cold brew in a while. They're all really good. I like, you know, more chocolatey coffees for cold brew.
Here's the thing but about chocolatey coffees, Kyle. They don't ever taste like chocolate. That's the thing about them.
Well, Kyle I don't know where they decide that they're going to put that. He can really dictate that.
I disagree.
Coffee connoisseur Kyle.
Right.
That's your.
I think they can taste chocolate. All right. Well, okay, fine. If you want to.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. Don't let my cynicism get in the way of you explaining.
Peter just has commoner.
No, Peter, I think your experience matters.
Yeah.
I think Peter's experience matters, though. So I'm going to speak to it a little bit.
Thanks.
Chocolatey coffee often tastes nutty and smoother. So if you want to go with that, then like totally go with that.
What is going on with the circuitousness of these descriptions? Chocolatey coffee tastes nutty.
Yes.
Should taste chocolatey, no?
Mm.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't always. I'm just saying they align often.
Yeah. Mm. What it sounds like you're doing is it's sort of like you are on Google Maps and you are adding stops on the destination. It's like eventually I'm just going to get to like, we're going to get to, it tastes like coffee, but we're going to make a stop at Chocolate Town and Nutville. And, and it's going to eventually, we're going to end up at coffee. Is that true or false?
Well,
yeah,
you know, it's false, but that's also not the point of this quarantine.
If anyone
listening wants to talk about coffee, for any amount of time, please hit me up. I'll talk to you for hours. I will cancel all my plans. Anyway, okay. I'm getting lost in my story.
Yeah.
I started brewing cold brew. It's really convenient. I love it, but I can't drink it, and I don't like it because it's really convenient. Because the thing that I love about brewing hot coffee is that it's a daily ritual. It's like just a daily routine thing to kind of center my mind. Like, I think, like, what did I do right this time? What did I do wrong? What am I going to do better next time? Kind of gets me in this good mindset for the rest of the day. But when I'm drinking cold brew, I'm just like, you know, pour this cold brew, pour a little bit of water in it. We drink it down. We're caffeinated. And it led me to over-caffeinate. Led me to be, you know, just less thoughtful about my day. It was great. It was terrible. It was all those things. I'd recommend starting drinking cold brew and then stopping.
You have to have the experience to make you just have the hot brew, huh?
Yeah. So I'm back to doing some pour over every morning. I did it this morning and it was great. Highly recommended.
This should be a TED Talk. You should turn this into a TED Talk, and you should shoehorn it into some take on like technology. Yeah. Or like just like the modern world, you know, where it's like
social media is our cold brew.
Yeah, exactly. All these conveniences.
Yeah,
but it's killing us.
And then you know,
we're over caffeinated. Yeah,
like inputting like his own like illustrations, kind of being like, you're wrong because X, Y, and Z. And you're hey, Peter, sit down, and that could be like part of like
for your TED Talk. Right. Yeah, for your TED Talk, you should keep. Bring me on, keep me on retainer, and I'll just come and I'll be like the cynic from the front row, and you can shut me down, and it'll add credibility to your talk.
Oh, like a built-in heckler.
Like a built-in heckler, yeah.
Sweet, yeah.
That's perfect.
That's great. I really like that, though. I like the idea that sometimes the slower, more methodical approach is actually the right one, the best one.
Yeah, there you go.
I would say.
Process-driven.
10 out of 10, that's recommend. Great.
10 out of 10.
Paige, recommend something to us. We're dying to know what to do. You have to tell us something to do.
So particularly my dad has been really big about Apple Fitness, and I get constant reminders. You know how dads are, just like, hey, this is what I'm doing.
College and Life alum, by the way.
He is. He has a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And so Layton and I have been doing some Apple Fitness workouts, specifically the HIIT workouts. And if people ever heard about them, they're
HIIT or HIP?
HIIT.
HIIT, right?
Yes.
HIIT?
I have no idea what it stands for. Something with
intervals. Isn't that how you spell HIIT?
Yes. It's high intensity
interval training.
Yes. There you go, Kyle. Thank you. And so I don't know if anyone's heard of them, but they're hard. Like, they're so tough. But I recommend doing it just because you know, I think any way that you're getting active in your home is good, but I'm not going to say it's not, I'm not going to say it's easy. Okay. They're so hard. And what makes it sometimes really socially difficult is that you have the one main person, they're egging you on like, hey, do this workout. And you're like, no, it's so hard. And like, oh, but you can follow John over here. And John is just, he's like giving like 30%. You know, you can be doing like, okay, we're going to do this jumping jacks, jumping squat. And then John is just slowly putting his hands up and down. And like, you can follow John if it's too hard for you.
Yeah.
Who's going to follow so John and feel confident about their day? You know, like,
I worked out, follow John.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you have to like, it's like almost like this ego thing. Like, I can't follow John, you know, or to follow the main person, but you're just so tired, especially for like me who has not been as active during this quarantine and trying to get back into that. Dude, it's hard, but I can't, my goal is to not follow John, which might really seem like not a nice thing to say to other people who follow John, but you know, you just gotta, that's the whole goal is to not follow John, you know, not to
beat on John. I would say I would be unashamed to follow John, to be honest here. I'm not a high intensity workout type of guy.
Right.
I think John's more my style than anyone else.
In Cars 3, Lightning McQueen goes to the training facility and Cruz Ramirez is training him, and like he's driving like 5 miles per hour on the treadmill when everyone else is driving like 180, and like he's not like ready to use the simulator yet, and he just thinks like he's way beyond it, and so he goes on the simulator and then like crashes the simulator and breaks it, and it feels very similar. It's like, maybe if we all follow John, then we would work ourselves up to being, you know, Sean T, whatever that guy's name is from Insanity. You know, maybe John is the key to victory. Maybe John is the answer to all of our problems.
Yeah. And you know,
I think
what?
There's a little bit of John in all of us too.
Yeah. But you know what? Yeah. Like, that's false when it comes to these HIIT workouts. Like, sure, like John, every other situation, but these workouts.
You're not buying it.
Because you're gonna have,
you know, I'm gonna do, Paige, to remind you,
thrown.
I'm gonna buy you something to wear. I'm gonna buy you a bracelet, and it's going to say the message would be like, "What would John do?" And I'm just, it's too long to say, so I'm just gonna have it be WWJD, okay?
Yeah, and everyone's gonna know it means John. That's good. I'd also, you know?
Yeah.
I'd also like to change my quarantine corner to just follow John.
That should just be the title of this podcast.
Follow John.
Follow John. But don't if it's a HIIT workout.
Follow John. Yeah, don't if it's a HIIT workout. Yeah, yeah. Well, this has been delightful. I told you that I have fun talking with you too. And this has been this has not departed from that reality. So thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for your talks, both of you. Man, so good. And I hope people listen to this and are blessed by it.
Awesome.
Thanks for having
us. Yeah. Appreciate it.
So good.
Sweet.
All right, that is it for this week. Thank you so much, Kyle and Paige. It is such a fun part of this job to cash in on the years of knowing each other and to be able to talk like friends like this. Thank you for trusting me. Thank you for trusting us with your spiritual formation. And everybody, this is week 10. This is the end of our regularly scheduled programming, and I kind of want to celebrate, throw a party, have some hip hip hoorays. You know, by all accounts, next year will look more like 2 years ago than it looked like this year, which means I think we did it. We did pandemic ministry. It might be behind us. We might finally be able to actually leave Quarantine Corner. And honestly, looking back on this year, there is so much to mourn. Like, we mourn the loss of the senior years, of the freshman years, of not being able to be together in this season. We felt that tension all year long, but there's also so much to celebrate. And I want to resist any reductive kind of thinking of tying this all into a bow. But this podcast was a product of the pandemic, and it has been an absolute pleasure and a blast to do. And I could not be more grateful and humbled and honored for all of you who have listened to us. All of you who have mentioned to me that you've been listening, and I'll speak personally that for me, I felt connected to all of you in a way that was hard to come by in the times of COVID. So thank you for being a part of this community. And the plan going forward is to keep using this platform, to keep producing more podcasts, to keep having conversations. But for the summer months, it might just be a little less regular. So keep an eye on the podcast feeds. And it would take too long to thank all the people who have been on the show this year, but it's been the thrill of my professional year to have conversations with all of you, soaking in the epistles with you and just trying to figure out how to help our people become complete and equipped. My hope is that through our conversations, people who have listened will have more affection for the scriptures, more appetite for nuanced discussion, and just a more curious and captivated faith in Jesus Christ. And I do have to thank, though, Stanford Gibson for being the partner of partners in all of this. One day, Stanford, I'll look back and realize how lucky I was to get so much of your time, but right now, I'm just enjoying it. So as we wrap up this ministry year, of course, thanks Kyle and Josh for our music. Well done, gentlemen. And thank you to Mike Loretto, the gold medalist of podcast editing. Man, it has been such a pleasure to reconnect with you and team up on this project. If any of you need an editor, get in touch with Mike. You won't be sorry. Before we go, College Life, I want you to know that we love you more than we can say. That's the truth. See you soon.